it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Player Profiler and our podcast network is super resource intensive, and we rely on premium subscriptions to the website playerprofiler.com to keep the engine running. Go there, sign up for our player rankings, Dynasty Deluxe, DFS package, or go all in. Those that subscribe are everything to us. And welcome back to The Dominator, everybody. I'm your host, Billy Musio, and today with me, I'm joined by a special guest, James Brimacombe. You know him as Eagles Inside the Best Ball Streets. He is a contributor for Football Guys. He has his own site at bestballrankings.com. He is a multiple underdog finalist in multiple best ball contests. You cannot join a underdog best ball draft without seeing him in the streets. And over at the Football Guys site, they just released a best ball guide that's over 60 pages, and he just contributed to 20% or more of this project. Welcome to the podcast, James. Always a pleasure to have you on and to tap into that best ball mind.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've been doing these podcasts again, so it's nice to share some thoughts, and hopefully it's valuable to somebody out there.
Get you back in the swing of things here. Well, I'd love to talk best ball. We're in that time of year, right? We're in that lull between the NFL draft around the corner. People are still looking for their fix and get their drafts in. There's a little too early for a lot of folks for season long. So what do? We attack the best ball street. So love to get your insights on this, having multiple leagues that you have finished inside the finals at underdog. First of all, that's a great achievement. For those of you who don't know, it is very hard to get to the finals in any contest in underdog. And James here has done it pretty consistently. So let's talk about structure. Let's talk about best ball structure. What is your initial thought on best ball structure and kind of the do's and don'ts in your opinion?
There's so many ins and outs of it, right? So for one, I right now they have the super flex out there on underdog. I kind of more prefer like the standard. And I draft such a high volume, so it's almost automatic for me. Like I could enter three or four at a time and I kind of know where players are going to go, where they're going to land, what kind of stacks I could get, who's going to fall to me. Kind of, yeah, almost you could predict like the draft as it goes. So that plays a big part of how I attack these. Then structure is just, you got the roster structure where you only start so in best ball, you only start so many players each week. Kind of does it for you, but these tournaments are they're top heavy, and it's almost like four contests in one, where you have first 12 weeks and or 14 weeks, and then you go week 15, 16, and 17. They're separate. So I'm thinking a lot about that kind of stuff. I used to not think about that as much. So I used to be more, hey, I just want all these guys just to get me to advance and give me a chance. But now I've kind of like evolved gradually. So I've been doing best ball for like 6 years. So it's been something I've had to learn each year. Each year I'm learning new things. I love listening to the whole community. Like there's best ball community just growing massively. People have their strong opinions, strong takes, how they think you can beat a game. But that's the beauty of best ball. I don't think there it's solved, and I don't think it will be solved for at least a couple of years. So I'm going to keep firing all offseason here once again, and I think we're all on level grounds. So that's what I'm excited about. Structure, yeah, you want to find what works for you. If you're new to best ball, draft like 5-10 teams, and then kind of go back and analyze what you've done there and what the other drafters have done, and then kind of work out a plan from there, how you want to attack your season. So yeah, just basic stuff, to be honest.
So you mentioned, you know, looking at pass through and trying to get to the next phase of the tournament, and you mentioned weeks 15, 16, 17. There's a lot of experts out there, in particular Justin Herzig, who really kind of beats the drum for week 17 correlation. You know, where does this fall in line with your structure, and does it change your thought process at all? Do you draft for week 17 correlation in particular, or do you typically look at more weeks, you know, like you said, earlier part of the tournament, and then maybe partly in weeks 15, partly week 16? Or are you trying to stack to the max in week 17?
To be honest, that was the whole gig last year, right? Everyone's week 17, week 17. People had to memorize, they knew the matchups, everything. And I kind of steered clear of that. Like, I didn't, that wasn't my goal. That wasn't, obviously you want your goal to be, hey, I want to win the $2 million or whatever. See, I go into it more like, hey, I have a personal goal. I want to put this amount of money in, and I want to get an ROI of like 50,000, like, or whatever number it is. And that's kind of how I stuck to it. And there's different ways to accomplish that for me than typically, hey, I'm all in, all or nothing, $2 million. Like, to beat 500,000 people to win that prize is kind of ridiculous. So week 17 was not on my radar as much. I try to incorporate it a lot. I think if you're just a stacker, if you stack quarterbacks with players on their team, that's already giving you week 17. So you don't even have to think about that. And I think where we're saying there's four different aspects of this tournament, you break it up in fours almost, where I think you would rather week 15 to 17 combined. If you wanted to go deeper, I would look at those 3 weeks and kind of look for a strength of schedule, or kind of look at the matchups. Maybe there's teams that have more home games or dome games or whatever. But I think I would combine those weeks, to be honest, and not. And I get why the week 17 thing's a thing. And I'm going to try to get better at it this year, but it wasn't a big part of my game last year. And I think this year, probably maybe like 10% more, I'll look at it. But yeah, I'm not going to go all in on it.
You mentioned Superflex earlier. Let's briefly talk about Superflex. I know it's not your bread and butter, or maybe your favorite to play in, but I assume you still play in some. Do you like to go early quarterback inside Superflex? Do you need a top tier guy, in your opinion? And if you miss out on a top tier guy, do you chase it or do you push it? What's your strategy here in Superflex in these best ball streets?
Yeah, so Superflex, I think it's an awesome concept and a fun tournament, and the whole strategy changes. But the reason that it's hard for me is because I get so used to locked in on the traditional leagues and the ADP and everything, and my mind's already adapted to that. And then you just throw out Superflex League to me. I didn't do well on them last year, but this year I'm going to keep trying them. I'm going to try new strategies. And yeah, honestly, I think I've done 20 of the fast drafts, and I just entered 130 of the slow ones. So I don't know my strategy yet, but I'm just playing around with it. Half the teams I am going, I'm starting off first four rounds with like three QBs or sometimes, and other ones I'll just take Hurts or Allen, and then I wait until, and I take like, you know, Bryce Young or Kenny Pickett, and like two of those guys to pair with them. So I don't know. I don't know what's the best way to attack it and to beat it. But I know, I think there's roughly about 20 QBs that I believe in and feel like starts week one could finish the whole season. So I'm focusing more on those. I'm not focusing on like the Falcons guys or Commanders guys and QB situations that are just hard to predict. So I'm not taking late shots on those guys, and maybe I should. So I've seen a lot of people do that as well.
So you mentioned you like 20 quarterbacks. This year, quarterback in particular has really shot up the draft boards, I believe in part because we saw just a large gap between the top tier and even tier two, where in the past we've seen a lot closer results from tight end or from quarterback, you know, five through quarterback number 18 or 15. And this last couple of years, last year, I should say in particular, that was a very large gap. We had a lot of quarterback uncertainty as well in the beginning of the year, which I also believe led to the rise in the draft ADP in these quarterbacks. What is your take on the price of quarterbacks this year? And do you think that we'll see relief in terms of ADP, or do you think these prices are here to stay?
I think there'll be some relief, and I think the more we get drafting, I don't think quarterback's going to win your league, right? Super flex, yes, it's going to win your league, but traditional standard, I don't think it's quite as important. It's going to be more important to hit that probably top three wide receiver, you know, and you could pair two or three quarterbacks later and they could break out, and then you have spike weeks on top of that. So I don't think one QB, just because you have the top QB and you draft him, Josh Allen in the second round, I don't think that's going to guarantee you a win at all. So I'm going to do some of those builds, but obviously I'm going to probably build different. Like last year, Trevor Lawrence was a big target for me. Justin Fields was a big target. Daniel Jones, and those were all late guys. And I usually take shots about 6, 7, 8 of those guys. And I draft a lot of 3 QB teams, and I'm hoping, you know, half of those guys break out, and usually on my teams I'll have 2 of those guys in each team. So I'm probably gonna wait for the value on them, and it makes sense why they're all up high, but I'm not gonna go chase it right now.
So, in your single quarterback drafts, I mean, we just finished the big board, mm-hmm. right? Who are some of your maybe top owned quarterbacks in that tournament?
Let me come back to that. Yeah.
That was on the fly, not on the show sheet.
No, I'll pull up my ownership on it because, no, that's a great question. So I should know it at the top of my head, right? So I'm going to look at my exposures here. I've drafted 153 teams.
Based on what you said, I'm going to assume it's like Rodgers and maybe Tannehill and some later values that could potentially outscore their ADP.
Yeah, so okay, I caught the bad side of the Mac Jones news. So right, so he's number one. So he was like a 17th round pick all the time for me. So he was like a third QB. So he's my top 33%. Kenny Pickett, like I'm really high on the Steelers' value this year. I think Pickett. I know people hate him, and that's why people hated Daniel Jones last year. No one wanted to draft him, and I just think Pickett's like, he's the guy I'm just going to take all the time as my QB2. Aaron Rodgers is third, Matthew Stafford 4, CJ Stroud, Jordan Love, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, these names are gross, right? But I'm usually a 3 QB look for value kind of drafter. So like the top guy Hurts is my top guy, 8% of the elite guys. So I'm not drafting the elite QBs apparently.
The beauty though about Kenny Pickett, and I agree with you, I own quite a bit of Kenny Pickett as well, is when we look at their expected pass play, I mean it's up there. I mean it's above 600 attempts, right? And this is what we want from a quarterback, and we don't expect them to be, you know, extremely stout on defense, which they're probably gonna be playing from behind a lot in games, and or at least near, it's not going to be, you know, commanding large leads, I should say. And so this equates to good fantasy points from a quarterback position, and they're going to be throwing the ball more. And he has weapons, right? He has Deontay Johnson still, who in my opinion is bound to bounce back this year. He has George Pickens, who is just a contested catch monster and is going to continue to develop into an outstanding NFL wide receiver in his sophomore campaign. And then they have Pat Freiermuth inside as an outstanding tight end as well. So you have multiple, you know, skilled positions here that are able to catch the ball. You add in Najee Harris, who is a very capable pass catching back, and they have the weapons to succeed, at least from a you know, from a Pickett standpoint. And so the offensive line, of course, is the concern, right? If they can get better here on the offensive line. But no, I agree with you. I think that that Pickett has been a sneaky play and definitely a value inside these drafts as well.
Yeah, so to me, best ball is a lot different than redraft, where a lot of people talking right now, they'll have player takes and they'll have like, yeah, Kenny Pickett's awful, you know. But for me, that's, I love hearing those things, because I, for a best ball volume drafter, I know if I have 20 to 30% of Kenny Pickett, like I am okay with that, because the value I'm getting him at later in drafts, he's not my QB one. He's usually my QB two or QB three. And the way I look at that is these are all tournaments I'm drafting second half of the year. You know, once he was only a rookie last year, and the Steelers, maybe it takes them half a year coming into this year to kind of get on the same page. And I could see them being like a 500 team where they're fighting for playoff, and he's going to play all those games. And I just think all those Steelers are undervalued. They're my highest owned team. I'm not even like a huge Steelers fan, but I just can't. Every time I'm on the clock, it just feels like there's a Steelers on the board for me. So
we're turning this into a Steelers podcast now. I've Deontay Johnson, I'm a lot higher on versus consensus in my rankings and projections. I mean, we take a look at, he had just the most unlucky year from a touchdown perspective. And if he had just had four touchdowns, measly four, right, I think he'd still be being going as a top 24 wide receiver, where most places have him outside the top 30. And I definitely think the amount of targets that he commands inside this offense, he's going to continue to command those targets and is due for some positive touchdown regression. So I agree. I think the Steelers are undervalued. I think all around we can look for a bounce back campaign. We're going to take a quick moment and listen to one of our sponsors.
Hey, it's the Podfather. Now, in the offseason, I get into baseball, I get into basketball, and my preferred platform to play fantasy sports is Rival Fantasy, because Rival Fantasy has challenges where you can just take a guy, say, hey, this guy's going to score more fantasy points than this guy. They put two shortstops together, pick one. Point guards, pick one. Spoiler alert, you should pick Damian Lillard. Or they have the fantasy book, where you could pick over under on up to five guys. And then the more you pick, your potential payout quickly escalates. And finally, I submit a bingo card, because you can just go over under across the board, get your fantasy bingo card set, submit it. I'm not the biggest basketball or baseball expert, but I have a hell of a lot of fun playing fantasy sports on rivalfantasy.com. And the best part is, with promo code PLAYER, they refund up to $50 of any losses. So the promo code there is PLAYER on rivalfantasy.com. Go have some fun.
That's right. Get out there and have some fun playing Rival. It's a fun platform. You know what else is fun? Is sitting here talking and debating more roster construction. We talked about it earlier. This is a huge part of best ball, because I believe that quarter of the room typically eliminates themselves in the draft based upon poor roster construction. What do I mean by poor roster construction? You'll see teams that go out there and go five quarterbacks, two or three running backs at times, and they just seem like they're lost inside the draft room. What is your ideal construction from a positional standpoint? Are you a 3-6-8-3 guy? Are you a 4-6-8-2 guy? Which way do you like to go? How many quarterbacks do you typically like to take in a best ball, non-superflex? How many running backs do you typically like to take? How many wide receivers do you like to take? And how many tight ends do you like to take? I know you're a volume drafter, so I know you're going to say it varies and you're going to get all over the place. But if you were only doing 10 of these, which way do you lean?
So are you saying 20 rounds or 18 rounds?
Let's do 20. Did I count 18 or what I count?
No, I think you did 20. Yeah.
That was off the top of my head. I was just spewing numbers.
No. So, and we're talking tournaments here, right? We're not talking any cash games or anything like that, right?
Absolutely. Just, tournaments, yes.
It's always tournaments, right? We're just...
You're going for $2 million. Yeah. 10 teams. How are you building it?
If I'm in a tournament, probably, you know, I was going to say it depends, but I would say 80%. 80%, I'm probably doing 3-6-8-3.
Okay. And why? Yeah. I want to hear the why.
I think it sets you up for some nice combos. If you only going in there with two QBs, you're kind of limited. One of those guys gets hurt. They have a bad game, whatnot. And usually if you're going three QBs, you're usually trying to stack them. So you have a 1 in 3 chance of that team going off that week. So that's, I kind of like that angle of it. I like, it's a little bit safe. You never really want to be safe in these tournaments, but it kind of is a safety. I think it's a value thing too, where if I'm know I'm going three and I know I'm going three tight ends, I don't have to push those positions. I know we talk about you want a balanced roster when you're drafting best ball, like that comes up a lot. But I also think you have to sacrifice at some positions. And for me, it's always the onesie positions. And I always feel like later in drafts, I can get a better tight end or QB later. So those ones, like, I'll wait on, and I'm not afraid to get a third one on both of them. And then that sets you up for, you know, pretty balanced at running back, six, whatever you want to do. If you want to go early at it, if you want to, you know, just zero running back strategy there, 8 wide receivers, I think is more than enough. Like, I know there's a couple of years where everyone was wanting 10, 11 wide receivers, and they were the guys that were going to get you the spike weeks. But if you get 3 top wide receivers, wide receiver doesn't get quite as injured as much either. So I think you're kind of okay. So that, I don't know if any of that makes sense, but that's kind of my approach, just top of my head. But obviously every draft you go in, the draft board's going to shift and you're going to have to adapt as you go. And that's kind of the beauty of it. There's no set way to do it.
Okay. Now curveball, 18 rounds. How are you adjusting?
18, kind of similar, where I'm going to go, if I go QB early, I'm going to stick with 2. If I wait at QB probably till like round 10, I'm probably going 3. Same with tight end. Like, if I'm getting a tight end in the top 10 rounds, I'm probably only going to get 1 more and go with 2 and 3 QBs. So what's that? It's 5. So then I'll go with, I got 13 left. So I'll probably go 6 running backs and 7 receivers. So okay. I'll do 2-6-7-3 or 3-6-7-2.
Now, do you think it is wise, or I guess which way do you lean? If you're skinny at quarterback, do you feel the need to go 3 tight ends? Or do you, if you're skinny at tight end, do you feel the need to go 3 quarterbacks? Are you comfortable going skinny at both and loading up at running back and receiver? Or is it completely dependent upon who you are selecting at those 2 positions?
I think if you invest draft capital in QB and tight end, I think you can go 2 of each, and that's fine. And then you just kind of fill out what we'd probably go, 6 running backs, 8 receivers, and then 2 at each of the other ones. So I think that's kind of a standard build too. A lot of people do. It's not my preferred, really. I don't know. I think a lot of people saw last year, and I think a lot of the data that came out actually was more balanced teams were better. Like, they made the finals. And the years before, it was like, hey, 3-4 running backs, that's all you need to draft. And then, because you're only going for that top prize. And if you get one in there in the finals, like, you're golden, because then you have 10, 11, 12 receivers. But yeah, there's a lot of ways. And I think every year is a little different. So I don't know what the correct way is. I think I would do a little bit of both.
Let's talk about ceiling and floor. So you mentioned floor earlier. You mentioned the ceiling earlier as well. Are you drafting 100% for ceiling? Do you consider the floor when you're drafting, or are you just only shooting for the top prize, the $2 million? Or are you mixing in builds here that are typically safer than maybe your moonshots?
I'm trying to not play it safe. And the way I've kind of accustomed and built that out myself is, I think last year I did a lot better at it. The year before, I just like broke even year. Last year was a lot better for me. And it was, you know what? I'm not going to draft any old guys. Like, I almost treat my
ageist best. You.
Yeah, no, I almost treat my best ball drafts now just as like a dynasty draft startup. To be honest, because I think it's an easy way to do it where these their tournaments and the later rounds and the playoff rounds. So even these younger guys, they're going to have more opportunity later in the season. That's where you're going to get your breakouts. And those are the ceiling players. Like last year, I remember like everyone was on like Julio Jones, what a value, blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't care if I got him in the 18th round. I do not want him. And then he went up to like the 8th round or whatever because he had Tom Brady. He's like, I don't want those kind of players. So any player that's, I hate to say the age thing, also like injury, if you're coming off an injury, like I am not going to draft you unless you fall like 2 rounds. Just a lot of things like that I've learned. But definitely.
What's your age limit? Where do you cut the cap? Like your senior discount? What's that line?
Well, just chasing ceiling, like we said, right? So I want players. Okay. I want players in year 2 to 5. Like, okay, if I could build a whole team, a whole basketball team with just those, that age group. And I'm talking mainly running back and wide receiver. Quarterback, obviously different. Tight end, too. Like, tight end to me does not matter. Like, I don't, I'm a zero tight end guy. I do not care about tight end at all. Like, I will draft a whole team and draft my last 3 picks tight ends. I could care less.
Man, now I want to go out and build this like this dusty team just to do it. I want to go out and build like everybody over 30 and see how far we go. Let's try to think of every player we can, like round 1 through round 18 that's going to be dusty, you know, and to see if we can build this like senior citizen roster and see how far we can take it.
I'm gonna challenge accepted. I'll do that and I'll screenshot it over to you.
But so round 1 was it Devontae Adams? Is he the oldest one around? Kelsey would be, right?
Yeah, you're probably on Kelsey. Yep.
Let's go round 2. Who's the oldest in round 2? Is it trying to think off the top of my head, man. This is tough actually without having the ages in front of you. No, I want to do it. I'm going to do it too. We should do it. Let's each build a dusty team.
Now I want to look at ADP, right? So see where we're at. But yeah, for like round 2, I don't know who you'd be in on.
Oh man, it's probably a running back.
Derrick Henry, maybe.
Yeah, there we go. And then round 3 is probably another. Oh, you could probably, yeah, it's either Henry or you could probably go a receiver. There's some old receivers going too. Oh man, this is gonna be fun. I'm definitely gonna do this. All right.
If you can finish higher than 5th in your league, like I'd be shocked.
I'm gonna track it. I'm definitely gonna do it. All right. So we talked earlier about correlation. Are you a stacker or are you not a stacker? Just in general.
I've grown into it a little bit. I have never really been all stack or die kind of guy. So I haven't been on the clock and hey, who's my quarterback? Who's my receiver? Where are the other pieces right now? Like, let me put them in my queue, you know? Like that hasn't been me. But that's part of my game that I want to get a little bit better at. I don't think, obviously it probably helps your percentage a little bit, but when I'm drafting just hundreds or thousands of teams, to me that doesn't matter quite as much. It's definitely more about the volume and the different combos that I can get. But my number one thing's always about value, like where I can get guys and build my portfolio that way. So I'm always looking for value. But stacking, yes, I got a little bit better at it last year. I was kind of more like, hey, week 17, I stayed away from that. It's like, I'm going to do the stacking instead. And get better at that, and that's going to be my week 17. Like if it's a Texan stack, whatever, I don't care.
We don't have the schedule yet, but when we do have the schedule and it comes out, how close attention do you pay to bye weeks?
I've been playing best ball probably 6-7 years, and that was probably the first, you know, 2 to 3 years me doing it. I always needed that schedule, and it's something that was very important to me then. I've grown that it's not as important anymore, but obviously the onesie positions or your star players, like I don't want 3 of those guys on the same bye week. So that's going to be, if I'm on the clock, that's going to be an easy decision. Hey, I'm going to take this guy instead. You know, that's going to help my decisions. But I think it's important. I think one thing that's missed a lot in best ball is, you know, people I talked about injuries. Like, I don't like to draft injured players. I don't like to draft older players because I think they're kind of in line to get injured or cut, or, you know, their career's over just like that. So I taught myself to never try to take a zero in best ball. Like, I never want to take a zero. And I don't know if that's a dumb way to do it but I want to look at every week, all 17 weeks, and I never want to have a zero at any position. And I think that just sets you up. And I think even week one, like, I want to draft a team where I have 18 players. I want 18 players on week one, you know, and that sets me up for weeks 17 to actually have a chance where maybe out of those 18 players, maybe I have, you know, 12, 13, 14 live players still walking. So that's always how I looked at it. If I started draft and I draft Joe Mixon and I draft Alvin Kamara and I draft all these guys with question marks, it hurts your value. Like, it hurts your team right from the start. And obviously, okay, yeah, playoff weeks, these guys could hit huge and you're getting a value on them. But at the same time, it's a long season. And yeah, I'd rather just take more upside shots. And even if it's not such a high ceiling on players. So.
Okay. How about handcuffing? Do you typically like to lean towards handcuffing in best ball? Are you against it? I know in season long, it's a lot different. People like to take a handcuff, but what is your thought process with best ball?
So a handcuff, are you talking both, take like both backs? Both
running
backs?
Yeah, so like last year would have been like Hunt and Chubb, right? Or
yeah.
Do you stray away from it? Do you lean into it? What's your opinion on this one?
Yeah, it's always one that people say, this is the first rule of best ball, or first rule of fantasy football, right? Don't take both backs, you know? You're limiting yourself. I honestly think it's okay. Like, I've took teams where I took six running backs, and I've took, you know, three pairs of two running backs from the same team. Like last year, you could take Singletary and James Cook, and then, you know, like every team you could do a Swift and Jamal Williams, and like it's a good fine strategy. Obviously you're not going to reach at it, and it's usually going to happen if they kind of fall to you, kind of how your build goes. But I think it's an underrated strategy, to be honest. I think it's going to allow you to, like, what the good one last year was Penny and Kenneth Walker. You take both those guys, and I think they were ninth, like 8th to 10th rounds, right? Both of them. So really, if we only knew one of them was going to be the running back, like this year, Kenneth Walker, what is he, a second round pick? Because there's no other running back there. But you put Penny back on that team, and then they're going to kind of split. So one of those guys goes down and you have a top five running back just like that. So I think it's, and Penny was good at the start of the year, so he gave you a few good weeks as well. So things like that, but I don't think you should take a running back in the first maybe three rounds and then get his handcuff in like round 10 or 12, you know? But if you're taking two running backs and they're both after round 6 or 7, I think it's a great strategy.
Okay.
I think like what's the one? I think the Bears is a fun one this year. Like, yep. Herbert and Foreman. Like, yep. that's definitely one people should be taking. I think the Lions, like Montgomery and Swift, like that's too cheap. Like those are fun ones. And they're younger teams, and they're teams that kind of might break out. So that's what I'm looking for also. Like, I want good teams and teams that could break out. I think it's an underrated strategy. I think the numbers aren't going to show that's a good strategy, but I think it's going to help you along the way.
Okay. In addition to player projections, how much do you weigh contingent value? And so what do I mean by contingent value? So let's just say that player X, let's use player X as Madison. Let's talk about Madison. So you want Alexander Madison. The cost is a compromise between a standalone projection, right? So we know that he's, as of today, not the lead running back inside of this Minnesota Vikings offense. However, his projection would change if Dalvin Cook were to be injured or cut, released, traded, you name it. How much do you weigh contingent value when you're doing best ball drafts?
Uh, I I think you have to. I think you want to take those chances. You want to get ahead of the curve. And as a volume drafter, I want to find those edges. And then say after the draft, say, the Vikings, maybe they trade Cook or cut Cook or they draft another running back. So, but then Madison's value is going to change completely. And maybe it's up or maybe it's down. Like, I don't think it's going to go down. Like, he's still going to be a value, especially in best ball. Like, he's going to help your team no matter what. He's not too expensive right now. So he's definitely a guy you would want as your running back 4 or 5 on your team. He's definitely going to be a guy that I target and I have been targeting. Even if his price goes up 2 more rounds, I'm okay with it before I know exactly what the news is in Minnesota on their backfield. So I think it's a great way to get ahead of the curve. I think also like free agency and the rookies, like the free agents and rookies, those are what you kind of want to do the same with, right? You want to predict depth charts and things like that. So it's definitely a smart, it's definitely going to get you ahead. It's going to find you some values. But you're going to land on a bunch of landmines as well. Like, you're going to miss on some, and that's okay. It's as long as you're taking a player that's going to play, even if they're second on the depth chart, it's not a bad deal.
So I've asked a lot of questions today. Is there anything that you would like to share just in general of strategy for best ball that I missed that you would like to share?
Did we go over all the questions, huh?
We did.
Yeah. Just like that, whip through them. Yeah. I mean, I just see the state of best ball. It's growing. It's fun. There's a lot of content out there right now, and we're just right after the Super Bowl. You know, people, it's giving guys stuff to talk about now. So we can draft teams and we can try to predict. We can, you know, just have fun with it. And there's a ton of money up top on these. The super flex right now was 100,000 first, or is it 200,000?
Yeah. I don't remember off the top of my head. I know it's a decent amount.
Yeah. 100,000. So yeah, it's hard not to play that for $10, right? Even in middle of April. So it's kind of fun. And who knows after the NFL draft, what Underdog's going to release, what other sites are going to release out there. So apparently people have unlimited money and just want to keep entering these contests.
Well, James, always a pleasure to talk with you. I appreciate you coming on the show. Why don't you tell the listeners where to find you and what you're listening on or what you're working on?
Yeah, I'm at Football Guys, doing best ball content there. So we just released the best ball guide just this past week. So we're really excited about that. If you're a beginner, I mean, first 20 pages, it's going to really kind of outline what you have to do. And then there's a lot of strategy pieces in there that I put. I wrote a bunch of those. Like, I don't think there's any exact way to draft a best ball team. So I think that's the beauty of it. And that's what I'd encourage others to kind of feel that for themselves and to get an understanding of that. So yeah, I'd check that out. It's free. I think it costs you an email address. if you want to check that out, I think it has a link to our rankings and like a CSV also. So if you want to just click on that and load in your rankings on the Underdog, you can do that. What else? Just on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, so I'm always open. Like, if you have a best ball question, you can DM me or just send me a message on there. I usually try to always talk, engage and talk back there. I love to learn from everyone else out there. I listen to all these best ball podcasts. I love the live streams. I'm just still trying to learn. I'm just trying to grow. I'm trying to be a better player. I'm trying to look at new strategies, you know, and I'm just kind of enjoying it and, you know, making friends as we do it. Right. So yeah, if you need anything, yeah, just check me out on Twitter. So.
Well, everybody, you can follow him at Twitter at James Brimacombe. That is BRIMACOMBE for the audio listeners. We appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights on best ball. Again, you can find him in the best ball streets. He is Eagles. I'm sure you'll see him. There's not many draft rooms that you can enter that he is not in. So Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back next week with the Podfather himself on the Dominator, and I'll be back recording on Wednesday, Man vs. Machine with Dario with our projection debate, and then next Thursday in First Class Fantasy with Theo Grimminger and Jared Smola from Draft Shark. So thanks for tuning in. Have a good night, and we'll see you next week.